Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, October 7th, 2012. This is episode 916. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Ring Central. I love our phone system from Ring Central. Cloud-based, zero startup costs, and Ring Central is just $20 a month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. And by Ting.com. Ting is a new mobile phone service that makes sense. Save money with Ting. Pay for what you use. It doesn't require a contract, and it offers unlimited devices on one pooled plan. Ting's the thing! To save $50 on your first Ting device, visit techguy.ting.com. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphone. Find out what your gadget's worth and get cash to upgrade to the latest iPhone at gazelle.com. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. It's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, digital photography, anything that's on your mind, anything that has a chip in it. 88 88. Ask Leo is my phone number if you want a question or a comment or a suggestion. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. outside the U.S. Use Skype for some similar product, and you should be able to call and get into the show. 88 88. Ask Leo. Well, you've heard about the Maps fiasco, and I use that word in quotes, with the iPhone 5. It's a, you know, it's just a Maps program, and you can replace it, as Apple quickly pointed out, with other Maps programs. But now there's the purple flare problem. When you sell a lot of anything, you get a lot of attention. And if there's a flaw, however minor, you're going to get a lot of attention. And I always have said that when there's a problem with, there's always going to be problems with technology. Really, the question is not, are there problems? The question is, how does the company respond? You know, how quickly do they respond? How effectively do they respond? Do they make it good? Do they make it right? To my mind, but you certainly can correct me, but to my mind, this is even less of an issue than the Maps issue. Soon after the release of the iPhone 5, people started noticing when they took pictures and there was a light in the corner, a bright light source, that there'd be a purple flare or halo around the light source. And in fact, I don't think it's unique to the iPhone. In fact, I think most phones, certainly this is a Sony camera chip, and any phone using this Sony camera chip, and there are many, will have, I think, the same problem. So it's not that this is a big issue. Although, if Apple, and I think Apple does, wants you to replace your point and shoot camera with an iPhone, and I think people want to do that, then this is something you got to address. You may be fixed down the road. You can't fix it now, I don't think. So if you complain to Apple, you might get an email like this. This came from an Apple support staff. Our engineering team just gave me this information, and we recommend that you point the camera away from the light source when taking pictures. You're pointing it wrong. The purple flare in the image provided is considered normal behavior for the iPhone's camera. Now there's a public support doc. That was a private email to an individual who passed it along to MacRumors.com. Now there's if you go to Apple's support site, you can find this. Most small cameras, including those in every generation of iPhone, may exhibit some form of flare at the edge of a frame when capturing an image with out-of-scene light sources, especially really bright ones like the sun and so forth. This can happen when a light source is positioned at an angle, usually just outside the field of view, so that it causes a reflection off the surfaces inside the camera module and onto the camera sensor. So see, it's not going into the sensor. It's bouncing off the edges and bouncing into the sensor. Moving the camera slightly to change the position in which the bright light is entering the lens or shielding the lens with your hand should minimize or eliminate the effect. Yeah, actually, that's exactly right. In fact, every camera I've ever had has had this problem. And camera phones, worse probably than most, because these are cheap cameras. And surely you remember taking a picture and cupping your hand around the sensor to block the light beaming in there. It's just normal. The iPhone 4 didn't have that problem, says somebody in our chat room, M. Lewis. It's true, the iPhone 4 didn't have the purple problem. It had a different problem. In fact, the iPhone's famous for its lens flares and its unique-looking lens flares. I remember for many years the iPhone, maybe not the 4, but certainly the 3 and the original iPhone, the lens flare would be like blobs going down the screen. It's a cheap camera. It's not a point-and-shoot. It's certainly not an SLR. But Apple's response kind of cracks me up a little bit. Just point it somewhere else. Here. See, this is, the worst, unfortunately, the worst blot on the Apple escutcheon, the worst public relations issue for Apple, came with AntennaGate, right? Where this is where in the original iPhone 4 was, if you could actually hold the phone and watch the bars go from 5 to 0, because you could cover up the antenna because of that metal band around the iPhone, which, by the way, is gone on the iPhone 5. They don't do it that way, I guess, anymore. But the response at the time was to ignore the complaints, which were loud, and I among them. Steve Jobs was in Hawaii. This story is told in Walter Isaacson's biography of Steve Jobs. He finally said, all right. He flew back. He brought his son, which is kind of cool. He said, son, you should watch this. This is going to be a lesson in business. Went back, big board meeting or meeting of advisors or whatever, executives at Apple, and they went, hashed it back and forth. And finally, they acknowledged they had a press conference, and they acknowledged, yes, there's something wrong with it. But Steve said something was a kind of a mistake. His initial response, I think this was an email to somebody who complained to this, said, you're holding it wrong. And has that not now filtered into the consciousness? Is this not the joke that people make when something like this purple flare, you're holding it wrong? It is, isn't it? And that's how you can measure whether the lasting effect of everybody makes mistakes. Every company has problems with technology. It's how they respond. Apple's response was to give people a free bumper case. Somebody pointed out that there are no bumper cases for the iPhone 5. Apple obviously didn't want you to have. In fact, Apple doesn't make any cases, do they, for the iPhone 5? They want you to experience the iPhone in all of its beauty and glory. But what's the first thing people do when they get an iPhone? They get a case. Now, I'm looking. Now, we have a bunch of Mac iPhone users. No case. Or no, you have a bumper case. No case. You have a bumper case. Allison has a bumper case. No. Is that a case? No case. No case. No. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe because it is a beautiful phone, right? You don't want to put in a case. Too bad that it's made of glass. But that's just the way life is sometimes. Beautiful things break. The new iPhone has a metal back, so it's probably a little less prone to shattering. Kenny says in San Francisco, Steve Jobs never said you're holding it wrong. He said, don't hold it that way. Yeah, that's how folklore is, isn't it? Don't hold it that way. Same idea. The purple lens flare, just point it somewhere else. 8888 Ask Leo. We've talked about the iPhone 5 for the last couple of weeks. Nice phone. Nicely done. Beautiful iPhone. Well made. It really feels like kind of a... And I guess this is why you don't want to put in a case. By the way, I don't have a case. But no, you know, the cases really aren't... There aren't many to choose from yet. But it's well made, and it's a beautiful kind of work of art. It's probably not state-of-the-art anymore. There are better cameras out there. There's... you know, I think you could argue that Android might have some more functionality. You could say that, you know, the screen size just is still a little bit small in this age of 5-inch and 6-inch screens, but it's still a beautiful phone. If you like iOS devices, or you kind of have a lot of apps and that kind of thing, or there's no reason not to get an iPhone 5, especially if you're due for an upgrade. It's a nice upgrade. And what's good for everybody, the good news for everybody, is there's so many good choices out there now. I was carrying the iPhone 5 exclusively for a while, and I just couldn't do it. I now carry both the iPhone 5 and my Galaxy S3, which does have a highly unattractive case on it, I might add. I like a big screen because I'm a big guy with big fat fingers. 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's talk tech. Phones or anything you want. It's on your mind. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, our show today brought to you by my friends at RingCentral. You know, when we moved into the Brick House studio, we had to get a new phone system. And we did. And it might look to you very much like, any old business phone system. There's my system. I got multiple lines. And, you know, I've got the Do Not Disturb on right now. And it's, you know, it's a nice, this is actually a Polycom unit. But when I plug it in, I'm not plugging it into the POTS service. I'm not plugging it into a PBX in the basement. I'm plugging it into RingCentral, the internet. It's cloud-based phone system with zero startup costs. I liked that. I didn't want to spend thousands of dollars and put a PBX in the basement that nobody could figure out. As low as $20 per user per month. That's what we pay. So, and when I add another employee, I get him a phone, I plug it into the wall, and ba-dung, ba-ding, lum-ba-gung. It was Russell Tammany, our IT consultant, who suggested RingCentral. I'm very glad he suggested it. We have been very happy, more than a year now. And it does things you can't do with a regular phone system. For instance, there's a RingCentral app for your iPhone and Android phone, so you can place calls from your cell phone, and it looks like it's coming from the business number. Your voicemail gets emailed to you. Faxes get emailed to you. It's just a lot of stuff like that. It's very handy. Our phone tree will ring my cell phone, for instance, if this office phone doesn't go through. Call 800-543-9980 if you want to find out more, or visit ringcentral.com and use a promo code TWIT for a 30-day risk-free trial. And just for my listeners, when you buy a desk phone, you'll get a second phone free up to 20 phones. So that is a way to get your office. I wish we'd had that offer. 800-543-9980, 800-543-9980, or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. It really is a great service. If you're setting up a new business or you're getting tired of paying through the nose for your old phone service, get something that's very modern, state-of-the-art, ringcentral.com. Use the offer code TWIT. TWIT. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. A little Mumford for a Sunday morning. 8888-ASK-LEO. Hey, let's just go to the phones. Chris, I do want to say Chris Marquardt, our camera guy, is going to talk about lens flare. He's listening. And he said, hey, let's talk about lens flare next hour. So lens flare is something that happens to all cameras. We'll talk about what it is, what to do about it, when you want it, when you don't want it, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Lens flare next hour. So it's not just camera phones. All lenses get lens flare. And there's some people like J.J. Abrams, the film director, love it. Remember the new Star Trek? I felt like I was sitting in the sun for the whole movie. It was just lens flare. I'd be like, my eyes are burning, because it's just lens flare after lens. He loves those lens flares. Let's go to the phones. J.R. in Detroit, the Motor City. Hello, J.R. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey there, Leo. I've been listening to you for several years now, and I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I wanted to pass along a tip. I have a set of speakers that are about 20 years old from Polk Audio.
Good speakers. Polk Audio. Love them.
Oh, yeah. They do sound awesome.
Oh, yeah. And I think speakers 20 years ago were better. Maybe it's just me. My ears were better 20 years ago. But I think speakers 20 years ago were better. I don't know why. I just feel like they're not as good nowadays.
Yeah, I will have to agree with you on that one. I had a situation where the spider coil on the woofer, one of these, their passive radiator type two-way design, and the spider coil had come unglued, and so the cone kind of like jumped out of the whatever you want to call it. Anyway, I ended up taking some super glue and gluing that down, but in the process of doing that, I had ripped the surround, the rubber surround.
Oh, dear.
So I super glued that back together, and once I got it back together, I just sprayed. I took them both apart, both speakers, and sprayed them down with Armor All inside and out, and they're like brand new again.
Wow. That's a great tip. Super glue and Armor All. Now, you got to be careful because you don't want to get any glue on the cone, for instance, because that'll change the response.
No. I've been in audio all my life.
So you know what you're doing, yeah. See, I think older speakers sound better, but they also, the glue dries, the cones dry, things kind of wear. So Armor All, really, I'd never thought of that. Now, that's not on a paper cone. That would be on a rubber cone.
No, this was paper and rubber, you know. So, rubber surround. And I just let them soak for several days with a whole bunch of it. I've used almost a half a bottle of this Armor All stuff on there.
Now, what is Armor All anyway?
What the heck? I don't know if you can even buy it anymore.
Oh yeah, you can buy it. I know what you'd use it for. You know, it kind of reconditions or brings back rubber. But I'm wondering what's in it. It's white, right? It's like
I have no idea.
Yeah, let me you know, because it's probably, I would guess it's silicone or something like it.
Well, I would imagine it's some kind of a petroleum. Whatever.
Yeah.
And silicone. Doesn't really matter. The speakers sound great. I shot the tweeter down, which is a dome tweeter. And it's a 6-inch radius woofer with a passive, radiator. And
That is a great tip. Now, I will not be held responsible, ladies and gentlemen, if you do this to your speakers and they're... that's not my part. Not my fault. You're holding it wrong. But JR says to do it. It's a good idea. You know, when you have an older set of speakers, that's one of the things that does start to happen. But gosh, some of these classic speakers.
Going out and spending $500 for
this. And Polk Audio is fantastic stuff. You know, I think one of the things that happened is a lot of these companies got sold to bigger companies, and lost the vision of the founder, and they just kind of became big.
Well, if I could have it my way, I would own a set of Klipsch horns.
Me too. Me too. But then those would have the same problem, I would guess. They would dry out and the glue would loosen and you'd have to condition them. I wonder if there's a business doing that.
Well, in the Detroit area, there's really not a lot happening. We had Almost Hi-Fi here for years, which was a real high-end audio shop. They went out of business two, 3 years ago. So there's really nowhere to go. You just got Best Buy, and, most of the stuff in there is not all that good.
Yeah. And, though, I think it's interesting, and Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy, I think, observed this. People are starting to buy stereos. They're starting to want better audio. You know, Neil Young has been on a kick. Neil Young, the singer, formerly of Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and, of course, great solo Canadian solo artist. He's been saying for years, it's kind of like us crusty old guys, JR, you kids don't know good music. He says everybody's listening to MP3s, which are highly compressed, on little earbuds, and it's teaching us, to like poorly reproduced music. So he's created a new company and a new player that's coming out, and I will certainly review this. Now, the real problem, of course, is that Neil and I, and probably you too, JR, I would guess, are getting a little old. And so our ears are not as good, especially at the high end. So we maybe can't distinguish, really great sound from just average sound. I know I can't anymore. I listen to too much rock and roll in my day, and I listen to headphones, as my work and so forth. But Neil Young has decided to create a 21st century sound format that's much higher quality even than CD. It's a digital format. Pono, P-O-N-O, is the name of the company. And you'll be able to download special recordings. I think it's 96, What is the sample rate? I think it's 96 kilohertz and a 24-bit sound. So it's a much higher sample rate than the 16, than the 40, well, no, I see, wait, it's 44, CDs are recorded 44.1 thousand cycles per second, 44.1 kilohertz, 16-bit resolution. So that means 44,100 times a second, the computer samples the sound and assigns it a number in the 16-bit range. That's, what, 65,000 possible numbers. And that's how it samples. Neil Young wants to do a digital format that's higher quality than CD, higher quality than most recordings are made. And I can't remember. I'm going to have to look here to see what the sample rate is. I know it's 24-bit resolution. But, of course, you won't be able to play that back on your computer without special software or on an MP3 player. You can't play it back on an iPod. So he's creating a new player called the Pono, P-O-N-O player, that will play back this high-resolution audio. I guess it's uncompressed, or it's not compressed with what they call lossy, probably lossless compression. And Pono will have, he's already got, because he's Neil Young, he's already got the big three record companies to go along. So this I find very interesting. And I will certainly review it when it comes out, even though I won't be able to tell the difference. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Little Neil Young for you there. Thank you, Kyle Benham, our musical director. He's always on the ball, always playing appropriate, apropos music for the show. And he makes his playlist available after the fact on his Google Plus page, K-Y-L-E space B-E-N-H-A-M. And we'll also add it to the show notes. Show notes are online at techguylabs.com. Not only show notes for every show, we divide it up into question and answer, question and answer, question and answer. So you can find the question that you heard and the answer, or the segment, you know, where we're talking about Pono and find that. And then after the YouTube video comes out, which usually takes, you know, maybe a day, you'll be able to watch the YouTube video or listen to the question being answered, asked and answered, see the notes from the answer. And I hope and I beg of you, if you have a better answer or a clarification or an amendation, or you just want to say, Leo's wrong, please, in the comments, do that. The whole idea of this, we wanted to set this new Tech Guy Labs up site so that you could comment, you could add, so that people could go to it and really see a variety of ideas, suggestions, opinions about a problem. So if you have an opinion, for instance, on this idea of higher quality music that Neil Young's talking about. By the way, I found the quality that he's going to be doing is 190. So remember, a CD is 44,100 samples a second. He's going to have the sound quality, the samples, 192,000 samples a second. That's more than four times higher quality, right? And instead of trying to fit every sound into 1 through 65,000, it's going to be 24-bit. So that gives you, 2 million choices. A lot of resolution. A lot of resolution. So that should be the Pono player and the Pono format will be out next year, according to Neil. I'm sorry, did I say 2 million? 16 million. Thank you for the correction, Curtis. In fact, Curtis knows his math. With 24 bits, you'll have a choice of 16,777,216 different levels. That's how digitization works, you know. The issue is, how do we get sound, which is a waveform? So as I speak, my vocal cords, and the same thing with an instrument, are moving air, right? They're moving the air in sympathy with the vibrations of either my vocal cords or the guitar string or the piano string. And if you're in the same room, the air moves and it gets to you, and your eardrum then takes those vibrations in sympathy with the vibration of the string or the vocal cord and sends that to your brain. Your brain hears it. But if you want a computer to do it, the computer doesn't understand these waveforms. You can see them. They look like, you know, little ziggy waveforms, up and down, up and down, up and down, like the ocean. So the computer has to somehow get this into ones and zeros. So the way it does it, it's called sampling. And in fact, this is what all the process of all digitization is to take something from the real world and turn it into ones and zeros so the computer can manipulate it, transmit it, copy it. It's got to be binary numbers. It's got to be numeric. So the way we do it with sound is we sample it. So the computer, 192,000 times a second, that's a lot, looks at that waveform, sees where the wave is on the, if you imagine it on a graph, on an XY axis, you sees where it is on the XY axis and assigns it a number. In this case, a number that has, you know, very high resolution, 16 million possible levels. So it picks that number, and then it does it again and again and again, 192,000 times a second for Neil Young's format. For a CD, it's not quite so often, 44,100 times a second, and it chooses a 16-bit number instead. And then it does it again and again and again. So what it's getting is a bunch of numbers, that's all. And it can reproduce the sound by applying those numbers, converting that digital sound to analog. That's what a digital to analog converter does. Your sound card is one. And it gets back to waves. And the key is we need to store it in such a way that we can get all that information from the wave or as much as possible. You're never going to have a perfect reproduction, are you? But the more information you collect from that wave, the better you'll be able to reproduce it. It's not a complete, it's not a smooth wave, but you get enough steps in a curve, it can look like a curve. And your ear probably, I would guess at that resolution, can't tell the difference. I would guess, but I don't know. So this is what we have to do. We have to convert those waveforms from audio, the sound pressure coming through the air, to ones and zeros, store it, convert it, manipulate it, copy it, paste it, do all the things you can do with a computer. And then, when we're done, transmit it, comes on your computer or your sound player, and then your sound player has a digital to analog converter, does the reverse of that process. It undoes it and turns it into air, pulsing air that goes into your ear. Earbuds do that, speakers do that, and then we got music. The better we do it, the better it'll sound. The more, at least, I shouldn't say the better it will sound, but the more it will sound like the original. And that's the trick. That's what Neil Young wants to do. He says, we're not getting, and you know, he is a musician. He's there when the music is made. He hears it in analog form. And so I think, and by the way, Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy, is also a musician. I think musicians have a different idea about what we're getting because they hear the original. They know what it's supposed to sound like. Matt in North Hollywood, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Matt.
Leo, hi. I'm developing an app for both Android and the iOS platform. And on the Android platform, been fighting sort of with my developer. Is an exit button necessary?
Never. Neither on Android nor on iOS, no portable device needs an exit button, nor do most of them have exits in the menu. Mm. And there's a reason for that. The operating system on portable devices is designed to handle that. So you can stay in memory until it decides to release you. So every app, and your developer knows all about this, every app has routines in it that it's supposed to execute when the operating system says to it, hey, get out of here, you're done. It's a little deceptive because if you look at on iOS, if you look at, you know, you double tap the home button and you see the icons of recently launched apps, it looks like those are all running. In fact, they're not. And the same thing in Android, when you press and hold the menu button and you get those thumbnails of all the different apps that you've run, many of those are not in memory. Only the most recent ones may still be in memory. Most of those have all been exited.
If my app is taking up CPU percentage, then what? And it's just in the background.
Then it's not properly coded.
Uh-huh.
In Android and iOS both, they have routines that the programmer's supposed to use that say, hey, I'm in the background now. Okay, good, fine. You're in the background. I'm in the background. I'm going to turn off all my use. Your app is supposed to do that automatically, and I'm sure it will if it's properly coded.
I see.
The app cleans up after itself, and it really needs to do that because most users do not expect nor will they use an exit button.
I see. They don't expect it at all. Oh, wow.
No, in fact, I don't ever exit apps, and I would say most phone users don't, and we trust that Android and iOS will take care of that for us, and in fact, they're supposed to.
I see, and then I see Android is constantly upgrading to another version, and right now there's, what, 1,100-odd Android devices.
I mean, Apple made a lot of hay for a long time saying Android is fragmented. They don't say that as much anymore because now they have this iPhone 5, which is completely, is it 1136 by 640 screen? It's completely different screen size. Suddenly, yeah, it's fragmented too. You know, that's the nature of the phone business. It moves fast. Your programmer should be able to handle this. If you have a good Android programmer, it's a pretty straightforward process. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Is code not functional or elegant? What do Code Monkey think? Code Monkey think maybe manager wanna write goddamn login page himself. Code Monkey,
Mr. Jonathan Colton, ladies and gentlemen.
Code Monkey not crazy.
And the one and only song ever written from the perspective of a computer programmer. And it's highly accurate. Code Monkey like Cheetos. Code Monkey like Tab and Mountain Dew. Code Monkey, not crazy, just proud. What a great song. I love that song. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And we're talking computers. We're talking some obscure stuff here, but it's kind of fun. High-quality audio reproduction. Programming for mobile devices. Wow. We're getting geeky. Ron, save us. Ron from Laguna Niguel. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, how are you, Ron?
I have a question now.
Yes,
the past
sir.
2 months since I updated internet, I mean, updated. I had the updates on
Windows.
Windows. I have Windows 7 on
YouTube. Every second Tuesday of the month, you know, like clockwork, yeah. Microsoft pushes out these fixes, and boy, you better apply them because it's also an announcement to the bad guys, hey, we got a problem here.
Now I can't get on my website, so I have to do a lot more answering questions to get on my banking statements.
So it sounds like what happened, you have something called cookies.
Yeah.
And people often say, cookies bad. No, cookies good. Cookies are what's missing now. That's why you have to log in every time. Did you erase your cookies?
At the end of, it does it automatically, but I have that, it seems like it's doing it.
If you are automatically, you mean when you, every time you start Internet Explorer, you have it set to delete your cookies?
Yeah, but even when I'm on all day, I go on to another website and it just.
Well, that's the side effect. So you got a choice, Ron. You can either enter your password each time or you can let it save cookies.
All right, so what do I do now? I get on. Internet Explorer.
Go to the Internet options and go to the, I think it's probably the privacy tab.
Advanced?
It might be in advanced, but what you don't want to do is, I think people get the message, and I think wrongly so, that you're being followed around the Internet and that cookies are the culprit. Here's what cookies are. They were created in the very earliest days of web browsers. Netscape created them. What a cookie is a client-side, persistent client-side state information. That's why they call them cookies. Persistent means it's supposed to last between invocations of the browser, sessions, and so forth. A session can mean a variety of things, a visit to a page, or a day, or a week, or a month. But the idea is what we'd like our cookies to do is persist on your computer, not on the website's hard drive, but on your hard drive, in between invocations of the browser or maybe for more than a day and so forth. The reason, and then what is used in those cookies? Well, things like a token that says, oh, Ron already logged in. This is Ron. This is his computer. You don't have to do it again. That's how Facebook knows you're you, and you don't have to log in each time you go to Facebook or your bank. Now, banks often blow out cookies. In fact, they should each time require you to log in. You don't want the bank to just automatically log in. But Facebook, hey, it's okay if every time you visit Facebook, it doesn't ask for a password. When they create a cookie, they will also create a time to live. How long is that cookie going to last? And usually a good, reliable, responsible site, Facebook's one of them, will expire it every month or so. To just to make sure this is you know, this really is Ron. Somebody didn't, Ron didn't sell his computer to another guy who's logging in as him. And of course, if you sell your computer, you give your computer away, or you let anybody else use your computer, you should be deleting your cookies or clearing them out. That's why you might see a checkbox when you log in somewhere. Is this a private computer? Is this a public computer? If it's a public computer, you want to make sure it does not save that information, right? But if it's a private computer, for convenience, cookies are about convenience, it will remember you and say, hey, welcome back, Ron. You don't need to log in. I know who you are. It might remember what page you were on last. Notice that sometimes Facebook knows were you in the the news feed, or maybe you were looking at your wall. Other sites do this too. So that's what cookies are used for. Persistent client side, that's you, you're the client. State information. State is what state you were in when you left the website. It wants to preserve that. Now, people have all sorts of paranoid, and spyware's really kind of inculcated this, paranoid fantasies about what cookies can tell you. Cookies are not dangerous. Some privacy advocates will say they are. I think you should leave cookies turned on. If you are paranoid, and some people are more paranoid than others. I choose to be less paranoid, but if you are more paranoid and you're willing to trade convenience for security, because usually it's one or the other, you might choose to delete cookies every time. That will make you more secure, but less convenient. So you see, that's the trade-off, convenience versus security. A good idea is in the browser settings to turn off third-party cookies. This is the one area where cookies could perhaps be a privacy invasion, not a security issue, a privacy invasion. And it comes from the fact that when you visit a website, let's say you're visiting Facebook, there may be ads on that website that come from other sources, not Facebook. That's a third party, right? Let's say Starbucks has put an ad on your Facebook page. And Starbucks is setting a cookie saying, hey, yeah, he was on Facebook at this time, at this day. Then you go to another page. Let's say you go to Google Plus and Starbucks has an ad there too. Starbucks is a third party. They know now that you've been to Facebook and Google Plus. Facebook doesn't know you're going to Google Plus. Google Plus doesn't know you've been to Facebook. Facebook can't read Google's cookies and Google can't read Facebook's cookies. But Starbucks can read Starbucks cookies. So that's where third party cookies can sometimes cause a problem. In theory, because a single source can perhaps see a variety of sites, and it's almost always an advertising page that can see a variety of sites you've been to. In my opinion, who cares? So now Starbucks knows you've been to Facebook and Google Plus. So what? I don't know. And maybe the choice of the word, they call these tracking cookies. That's maybe what's scaring people, because that's a scary sounding, like, I'm being tracked. Well, yeah, Starbucks now knows you went to Google Plus and Facebook. They're tracking you. So what? Anyway, I don't care about that, so I don't set that off. But it's not going to harm your experience of the web. You're not going to have to re-log in all the time if you turn off third-party cookies. So on most browsers, the default is do not allow third-party cookies, and that's fine to turn that off. That won't impact whether you have to log in and get it or not. But if you are concern, having a problem because you have to log in a lot, it's probably because your cookies aren't being saved. Now, if you've turn off, delete cookies on exit, that's why. If you haven't, then sometimes the operating system can make a mistake. Maybe it made those cookies, it locked those cookies so they can't be written, something like that. Then you can have a kind of more persistent problem, and it's just darn inconvenient. But be reassured, it's more secure. There's always a trade-off, security versus convenience. You get to choose. Mark Tustin, California, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, by the way, Magnus Spheres were my favorite speaker, from somebody who could hear the whining of a tube TV from outside somebody's house.
You have very high pitched tones in your ears, huh? What was it? Magnus Spheres?
Yeah, Magnus Spheres. When I used to collect news for newspapers, people wouldn't answer the door, and I said, look, I can hear the tube TV whine of your TV. You're watching TV. Just come to the door. And people would actually come to the door and say, seriously, you could hear that?
You were a young man at the time. Do you still hear them?
Yeah.
Mark, hang on. We got to take a break. Do you hear something right now? That whining in my ear tells me we got to take a break for local news. We'll be right back with your call. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Hey, look, I got my Ting phone. I'm doing the Ting thing. You know about Ting? I love the Two Cows folks. They're out of, I think they're out of Ontario, right? Canada. And their goal in life is to change, to disrupt businesses that aren't working. So the first thing they did, Two Cows, Elliot Noss is their CEO. One of the first businesses they did was domain registration. You've heard us talk about Hover. And the idea is it's not being done right. It's not being done well. So we could change things. We could make it better. And that's why they created Hover. And now they want to do the same thing for cell phones. Let me find the Ting lower third here so I can pull it up for you. We haven't done Ting on the tech guy before. I'm really thrilled to have him. So the idea is, what's wrong with the cell phone business? All right, I'll show you here. Go to ting.com. Actually, we got a website just for you, techguy.ting.com. And take a look. Oh, wow. When you do that, you just automatically activate the Tech Guy offer code. You love the Tech Guy. How about you? So this is, browse around from here, but this is cool. As soon as you do that, they set a cookie, by the way. And so the Tech Guy code is now activated. So when you buy, if you buy anything, it'll automatically save you $50 on your first device. So what is Ting? Well, take a look at the plans, and this will give you some idea. The idea is Ting is month to month, no contract, no early termination fees, no bundling or ride-along services, no overage charges. So what you do, this is just kind of almost like a serving suggestion to give you an idea of what it's going to cost. I love this. They have a savings calculator, but you can choose from extra small to medium large, and you're going to choose minutes, 500 minutes. I don't do a lot of phone calling. How many text messages a month? 2,000. Good. And how much data do you want? And by the way, you can go higher than this. And the point is, if you go higher, it's at the same flat rate. The rate doesn't like suddenly hockey stick. You choose how many phones you want. That's why it's great for a family or a business. Look at 20 phones. It's $6 a phone per month. So I got two phones. I'm going to share all of this. And there you go. My plan would be $89 a month for two phones with this. But here's the point. You use less, they rebate it. You use more, they charge you at the same rate. You know, it's $3 per 100 messages, basically. $5 for 1,000. And they just charge you at the same rate. There's no penalty. There's no overage charge. You get credit on unused service. There are no add-on charges because at no extra charge, you get voicemail, SMS, MMS, three-way calling, caller ID, tethering, hotspot. No add-on charges. No mysterious line items on your bill. You pay for what you use, no more, no less. They don't want any hidden charges, recovery fees, or other stuff like that. Unlimited devices on a single plan. Each device, $6 a month, period. And they have a very powerful account control panel. That's fantastic. No hold customer support. That's one of the things Two Cows is famous for. 855-TING-FTW. That's the number. I love it. 855-TING for the win. Anytime between 8 and 8 Eastern. And a real person will pick up the phone. And they will not put you on hold. There's also great online support. Help.ting.com. They even have forums for Ting fans. Startup guides. They've done a great job. They want to reinvent the phone. So if you're looking for a new cell phone provider, it uses the Sprint network, by the way. So if you've got Sprint, you'll be in great shape. They've got a variety of phones. Bring your own devices coming. But if you want a Galaxy S3, you just get it. It's unlocked. It's your phone forever. You're paying month to month. You're not paying more than... They even have data devices, by the way. Oh, they now have femtocells, too. That's cool. Love it. This is too good to be true, says Minty. Try it. In fact, if you search for Ting on Twitter, hashtag Ting, you'll see a lot of very happy users. Techguy.ting.com. Techguy.ting.com, and your first device, $50 off. Yeah, and if, you know, you're in an area where Sprint doesn't work well, I'm sorry, you're out of luck. But if Sprint works well where you are, you're going to love Ting. I promise. Ting to Ting. Well, good day to you, my friend. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy and explainer-in-chief today.
I tell you.
I'm explaining how everything works. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. We're talking tech. We've been talking audio. Mark in Tustin is on the line. He has golden ears. That's what they call it, those the audiophiles who say they can hear things that others can't. Now, when you're young, I know the flyback transformer on a CRT made a very high-pitched whine, and I dimly remember being young enough to hear that.
Yeah, well, I still have to run past, you know, the anti-critter high-pitched whining.
Interesting. And there's sonar alarm systems, right? I used to hear those, too.
Yeah, I'm 46. When I go to my friend's house who has it for his front yard to keep the animals out.
You hear that?
I have to plug my ears and run.
Well, you know what the kids do? The kids, there's a ringtone you can get that's that high-pitched sound, and only kids can hear it. The teachers can't. Because as you get older, you lose the ability to hear high-frequency sounds. You would be a bad teacher. But they'll do that for their, message alerts, because the teachers can't hear it. And, I thought it was bogus. So I downloaded and I put it on my phone, and I played it. And all the people under 30 in the building went, oh! And all the old people went, what? It's really true.
Put the ringtone in the show notes, and I'll look it up.
It's called the mosquito sound. And if you... Tix just posted the Wikipedia entry for it in our chat room. If you look on Wikipedia for the mosquito or mosquito alarm, in France they call it, I don't know why, the Beethoven. but it's an electronic device. This is to deter loitering by young people. It's 17.4 kilohertz. So theoretically, human hearing goes from 20 hertz, very low, to 20,000 hertz, 20 kilohertz. This is right at the end of that. Now, on that article, there's a teen buzz ringtone. Some teens have found the once annoying sound can be used as a tool and turned into a mobile phone ringtone, preventing disciplinary actions that may be imposed by teachers if their phone should ring during class. It's called the mosquito ringtone. It's being sold... commercially. I'll find a link and I'll put it in the show notes for you, Tustin.
Okay. Right. Anyhow, I had two questions. One is there a text expander for the PC?
Jean McDonald was just here from Smile Software, and she's gonna say no, but there is something like it. Text expander is the greatest thing on the Mac. You type a couple of characters. Then you hit a key or you type an abbreviation, and it automatically expands it with boilerplate. So I don't have to type my address. I don't have to type the paragraph that says, I'm sorry, I can't help you because I get too much email. Things like that. Automatically fills it in. So there actually have been a number of very good programs that predate Text Expander on the Windows side. But I'm going to send you to a website that's very handy called alternative.to. And what this is you can enter in a program name like Text Expander, and it will then tell you alternatives to it, which is so fantastic. It does it for Windows and for Mac, alternative.to. But unfortunately, it looks like you have to choose... Oh, that's a shame. You have to choose your operating system. It's not cross-operating system. Aw, that's too bad. Let me see. Let me try to remember the name of some programs on the Windows side that can be used for auto-expanding. There was one I used that I think it was free. It was open source. It was a little complicated because you had to edit a text file that... had all the expansions in it, which in some ways is a little bit easier.
I'm a code monkey. I'm good.
Oh, you'll like it then. Let's see. Alternative to Text Expander. But what we want to do is find it for Windows. Is there a way to do that on Alternative to? Ugh. What is the name of the... You know, I'm just going to... I can't remember it off the top of my head. It will come to me, or I'll do some Googling, and I'll have it before the end of this half hour. How about that, Mark?
Okay, and then the other question is, for my iPad, I watch a lot of movies at 2.5 times speed. Maybe my good hearing.
Movies? Movies you watch that way?
Yeah.
Wow.
Unless they're the Bollywood movies I watch, because they talk too fast to begin with.
So, I've heard of people doing that with audio.
Right. No, really. I just watched John Carter at 2.5 times speed. I just watched Hysteria 2.5 times speed, which was hysterical.
Now, you don't do it... You do it for fun, or you do it because you don't have the time to watch the movie?
I don't notice the difference.
You don't notice the difference? Wow.
No, I just can process that fast. So, it you know, unless they're
Mark,
like...
Mark, do you come from another planet?
You must... I also have dyslexia. I found a new dyslexia font that helps me read faster. But yes, I am very...
super hearing, super perception... I'm a little worried about you. You must be an android.
No. If they came up with androids, Code Monkey wouldn't need girlfriend anymore.
That's right. You're a Code Monkey. What do you do for a living?
I used to. But right now I more work on the computers, but I will write code if need be. I'm getting into web development.
It's really fun writing software. I think people think it's such a specialty that they, or you have to be a math whiz or something. It's a great hobby.
Yeah, I mean, I have a degree from UCI, but yeah, do you have an idea for the VLC works really great on the Mac and on the PC, but when I looked it up for the Mac, VLC just seems to be a viewer for getting stuff from.
VLC on the Mac have exactly the same features that it does on Windows? I thought it did.
Yeah, but I want it for the iPad.
Oh, for the you didn't say iPad. Oh no.
Home
Apple,
right?
Apple won't let you do that. See, that's the iPad is not an open platform. So I don't know of anything, but maybe we'll look and see. You know, I do a show with Sarah Lane called iPad Today. And, literally every week we look for new apps. I've seen a lot of second screen apps, and there are video players certainly out there, but I've never seen anything on the iPad that will play double speed. Double speed. Wow. For video, not for audio. Many podcasting apps will do that, of course. Audible will do that. Audible, but on the iPad, but for video. Strength said, he said iPad. It was just too fast for you to hear it. Mark, I'll look, and I will find you an alternative. There are really a lot of good ones, but there's one I particularly like that I can't remember the name of on Windows for a text expander. And it's a great program because it not only will expand text, but it will allow you to pre-program mouse gestures and all sorts of stuff. It's something I kind of wish were available on the Macintosh. I love text expander and use it religiously, but this is even more. Auto hotkeys, Web 166, you rock. That's it. The chat room is my brain. I've externalized my brain, and now they know more than I do. AutoHotkey.com. Fast, scriptable desktop automation with hotkeys. Now, it does a lot of things, but in addition to it, you can just expand abbreviations as you type them. For example, typing BTW will just go and become by the way. But that's just one of many things you can do. The only negative on this, and it may be a positive, is all of the functionality is built into a text-based configuration file. It'll create them automatically. This is such a cool program, and it's open source and it's free. Windows only. AutoHotkey.com. I install it on every Windows machine. It just shows you how long it's been since I set up a Windows machine. Thank you so much, chat room. You're brilliant. And it's alternative2.net. Thank you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's a 17.4 kilohertz whistle. It's a mosquito whistle. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Auto hotkey. What a great program, man. I'm glad you found that, chat room. You want to join us in the chat room and be my brain or help me? I'd love to have you. All you got to do is visit the website, techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. Links there to the chat room. There's a phone number there. And, of course, show notes for every single show that we've done. This is episode 916. Wow. I think if you go back too far, you have to go to the archives, which you're not in good shape. We're working on it. 88 Ask Leo is the number coming up in just a few minutes at 33 after the hour. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, he's going to talk about lens flare. What's the deal with lens flare? He's all cameras have it. We'll talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly with lens flare. But first, Joe in El Cerrito, California. Hi, Joe.
Hello, Joe.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome,
how are you?
Welcome to the show. I'm great.
Hey, I got a pretty straightforward question, a two-part question here. I'm a dad with a 9-year-old and a 4-year-old, and I've in the past been a PC guy, but I want to get a computer for the whole family, for mainly me and the kids. And this is what I want to do. I want to do some modest video editing of home movies and creative projects that I do with my kids, photo editing, you know, go on the internet and have the kids watch movies and do some research projects and play some music. And I bought a MacBook last year. I like it a lot. It's my first Apple product, and I was looking at the iMacs, and they're really impressive and beautiful. And the question is, do I go that route or go for an all-in-one PC? And it seems like the all-in-one PCs or desktops, they're obviously cheaper, but then when you start thinking about programs you got to buy and
right.
things like that,
right.
They get close in price. And the second part of that question is, if an iMac is the way to go, I've been reading a lot of, you know, online rumors lately that Apple's going to announce the new iMac anytime. Is it stupid to buy the current configuration? And not having experience with Apple, I don't know. Do the new products tend to be more expensive than what exists right now? And so I'm just sort of stuck, not knowing what to do here.
You know, it's funny people ask that question about Apple because, of course, with PCs, there's always a new one coming out. And in fact, Windows 8 comes out October 26th, and all of the PCs will be updated. But you didn't ask me that, did you?
No.
People don't.
No, it's not something.
People don't care. Yeah, they don't care on Windows, but on Mac, boy, they don't want to get the old Mac. I don't know why. So,
if the new one's the same price, I just don't know how.
It's always the same price. What Apple does, is they put more features in at the same price. They don't change the price.
They don't change the price. So if I buy the current one today and tomorrow they come out with the new one, then I'm sort of a sucker.
Because Apple will give you a 30-day turnaround.
They will.
Yeah.
Okay.
They give you, so you can trade it in. You can actually bring it back in 15 days and say, I want my money back. And you have 30 days. If they come out with a new product within 30 days, and by the way, if there is a new iMac this year, it will absolutely be before November 7th, 30 days from now.
So people can buy it for Christmas.
Right. There's no way they'd wait longer than that. There may be a new iMac. There may not be. It's Apple doesn't say. There are reasons they might want to do one. Intel has a new chipset called Sandy Bridge. Apple has not yet updated the iMacs with Sandy Bridge. They've done it with their laptops, but not their iMacs. I don't really... To be honest, I think the current one is fine.
It's fine for what I want.
Absolutely. And you make an interesting point. You know, the comparable Windows machine, and I like it a lot, is the Dell XPS 1. And price-wise, it's not a huge savings, but it has a lot more features. It has an HDMI port. It has cable in it, so it has a tuner in it. You can put the cable directly in.
Right, yeah, the TV tuner, which the iMac, I guess, doesn't.
Does not. So it's not so much that it's cheaper. It does more. It has more going on with it.
I see.
Love the Dell XPS 1. It's a Windows 7 machine. I'm sure they'll do a Windows 8 version, but I think it's a great computer, very comparable to an iMac.
And the only thing is, you know, getting into buying a video editing software, which obviously...
Well, and then you'd have to spend $80 for Adobe Premiere Elements.
Yeah, which isn't a lot.
It's not a lot. Now, the Mac comes with and is more integrated into it, iMovie, which hasn't been updated, by the way, in about 3 years.
Right.
But iMovie's very good, and then if you step up, there's better and better programs, and they're more affordable on the Mac side than they are on the Windows side.
And if I use Picasa, obviously it doesn't matter which
doesn't
I
matter,
get.
Doesn't although you use iPhoto probably instead.
I do, but I hate the organization. I can't figure it out. It's been a year.
Right. Yeah, if you like Picasa, they have it on the Mac. I like Picasa. I agree with you on that.
Yeah. All right. Well,
I would say they're very comparable, and I wouldn't look too much at price because it's hard to compare the two. If you really want an if you wanted to use it as a television, I would say probably better to get the Dell. But the high-end Dell that has all those features is about the same as an iMac.
Now the look, the resolution and the monitor
very
is going
comparable. Dell has good monitors. They're not Apple, I would say maybe marginally better, but they're getting the same panels. It's just whether they choose the high-end panel or the low-end.
Yeah. So watching a movie on either one's going to be
looks great. I was very impressed. I thought the Dell XPS 1 was an excellent machine. Now personally, I think the Apple operating system is better for kids. It's less likely they can get into trouble. It's a little more secure. It has very good parental controls. So I like the idea of a Mac. And my rule of thumb was always Mac at home, Windows in business. And or if you're a gamer, get Windows because there's far more gaming.
Not a gamer. But and the TV adapter, you can add that to.
Oh yeah, sure. Elgato makes a fantastic product called iTV, which is in many ways more compatible because the truth is there's no cable card built into that Dell XPS 1. So without that, you can only watch unencrypted cable. It's not very useful.
I see.
Or you could put an antenna, I guess, on it. Yeah.
All right. All right, well, that answers my main questions.
They're very comparable. I think it's almost, at this point, a personal choice. It's an opinion. It's not, there's no factual difference.
Right. Understood.
But I my personal choice, my kind of preference, is probably for an iMac for your kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the iMacs a lot. I my kids use iMacs. I have an iMac sitting right in front of me. I just think they're great.
Yeah, they're beautiful. I mean,
yeah.
No doubt.
Well, and Dell just copied it, right? I mean, the XPS 1 is beautiful in exactly the same way. It's the same machine. So, you know, maybe if you, you know, it's funny. Dyson makes the, you know, these bagless vacuum cleaners with a special turbine. And they're very expensive. You can buy a functionally identical vacuum for half the price because they just copied Dyson. And
right.
Part of me says, well, I should not buy these cheaper vacuums because it's just a copy. But then another part of me says, but why are you spending twice as much if you're not getting twice as much?
Right. I mean, if it's legal for them to copy it.
Well, it's not. But Dyson, you know, it's very hard for Dyson to enforce the patents.
Yeah.
It's not. They're actually ripping them off. And Dyson, when you get a Dyson, I did buy a Dyson vacuum. When you get a Dyson vacuum, they have a whole pamphlet in there about how they're being ripped off. they hate it. They hate it. So I have a Dyson, and my new vacuum, it's an LG. Complete ripoff. I'll give you the comparison. I think Mac and the Dell XPS 1 are exactly the same issue. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, we're brought to you today by Gazelle. Are you ready to get it? I wish Gazelle took vacuums. I would absolutely give them my my Dyson. But are you ready for a new phone, maybe? Huh? GAZELLE.com. That's Gazelle. Gazelle is the place to kind of get new stuff by selling your old stuff. And boy, do they have a great selection. And do they give you good prices? Let's say you have an iPhone 4S. And you're still in contract. You know, I don't know. I really want the new one. And maybe you're, as I was, on AT&T. And you really want to get a Verizon. So let's get an offer. It's $265 in good condition, flawless condition. It's even a little more, $275. Throw it in the box. Anything worth more than a buck, Gazelle pays the postage. But don't just do one thing. Get rid of everything. If it's an iPad, an iPod, a MacBook, or a Mac Mini, a Mac Pro. My Mac Pro. Wow. Hey, maybe it's time to get rid of my Mac Pro. Get one of them new iMacs. This is it. Well, let's see what it's worth here. It's in good condition. 100% functional. It's got, you got to go through. Let's see. It's got actually 2 terabyte hard drives. It's got 8 gigs of RAM. It's got a super drive. I got the power cord, the keyboard, and the mouse. Now, how much would you pay? I've never noticed it. I'll take it. for a 4-year-old computer, $513. Now, you throw it all in a box. They pay the postage on that, too. BlackBerry phones, HTC, LG, Motorola, Nokia, or Samsung. Nokia or Samsung. iPads, iPhones. Don't let it just gather dust in a drawer. Get rid of it. Get some cash. Oh, and let me give you a pro tip, okay? They'll send you a check. They'll give you a PayPal credit. But you could also get an Amazon gift card. And if you do that, they bump the price 5%. I think they're just rebating their Amazon affiliate fee. So it's an extra 5%. If you spend a lot on Amazon, that's a, you know, as good as cash, plus 5%. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E. I know you're hankering for the new stuff. You're honkering for the new stuff. You want that new iPhone 5. This is how you get it. Once you get your new iPhone, you can get a quote for 30 days. You don't even have to send it first. Once you get your new iPhone, you just ship your old one to Gazelle. They very quickly turn it around. And their data experts will take all your data off, too. They'll refresh it. GAZELLE.com. I'm a lover of Gazelle. I figured out how with Gazelle, I can trade in my Galaxy S3, my old Galaxy Note, and my Galaxy S2 and pay for that unlocked Galaxy Note 2. So maybe I should do that. Maybe I should. I really want the Note 2. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think this is going to be your new theme song, Chris Marquardt. Kodachrome, they play all the bruh. I love
yeah,
it.
They don't. They don't make you. You can mention that without any advertising because
they don't. They no longer make it.
They stopped doing this like last year sometime.
Oh, they do make. Well, Kodak doesn't make any film anymore, but you could still get Ilford or Fuji film. There are still some.
Oh yeah, there's lots of film out
film.
There.
We talked about this a few weeks ago.
Yeah, sure. But half of my photography is still film.
Wow.
Or again film. Let's put it this way. Again film. I rediscovered
back
it.
Back to film. What film do you use? What do you like?
Oh, lots of them. But from on the black and white side, it's a Kodak film. It's the Tri-X, which is
what do you
awesome
buy old stock?
No, it's still available. You can still go to the shop and buy new Kodak film. They still make it.
So they make Tri-X, but it's not Kodachrome.
Kodachrome, they don't do anymore. There's some, I think there's slide films. They don't make those anymore.
Ektachrome is gone. But, you know, I love Tri-X. They make Plus X?
Ooh, not anymore. I don't think so.
Tri-X was the ASA 400, so it was fast, black and white. It had a nice grain. It was just a beautiful film. I always liked Tri-X film.
Yep, it's still there. You can still buy it.
Always strikingly honest. That's the slogan for Tri-X. Wow, huh?
Yeah, but let's not turn this into a Kodak ad.
No, all right.
Even though they can actually use it, you know.
I'm amazed they still make it. That blows me away. So, no, we wanted to talk about lens flare because this is the big story, and I started the show with it. Apple has to fight against the PR again. The PR hit because apparently the iPhone 5, if you take a picture with a bright light just out of frame or maybe just in barely in frame, you'll get purple lens flare. And all you have to do is Google purple lens flare, and you'll see hundreds of posts about this as if how dare Apple have purple lens flare. In fact, you'll find a lot of images with purple lens flare as well. So what's the story, Chris Marquardt?
Well, let's first look at what lens flare is, because lens flare happens because of the properties of glass. Now, lenses are made from glass, and multiple lens elements, multiple glass elements are in a lens, and light that passes through will also be reflected by the glass. So there is some bounce back against other layers of glass, and bigger lenses on DSLRs have, I don't know, 4, 6, 8, 18 different layers of glass. So there's lots of surface that light can bounce off of, and then ends up being flare. This happens in pretty much every lens. It's not necessarily the camera. It's more the lens that does that. And it's something that is pretty normal. Most lenses do that. There are just a few lenses out there that are almost immune to it. But
you don't want to get rid of it. In a lot of cases, it's used artistically, intentionally.
Well, you said it earlier. J.J. Abrams is one of the pristine examples of that. He uses lens flare in his movies
all
just to add atmosphere.
Yeah.
And you know how he does it? Right outside the frame, he has people standing there with big, big flashlights shining them right into the lens of the camera. You don't see the people, you don't see the lens, but you get the flare.
Wow.
And that really adds atmosphere. So I'm actually a real fan of lens flare. I like lens flare. And it's something that you live with. So on the one hand, what Apple says is that, yeah, point your camera slightly different is probably a good piece of advice if you don't want it.
But use a hood or block it with your hand.
Use your hand
done that.
Put it above the camera.
Now, why is it purple? I mean, that's, I think, the reason. I mean, look, at iPhones have had lens flares since the day they came out. Yes. But the thing is, I guess, that it's purple.
Well, the purple thing is, if you have a pair of anti-reflective coated glasses,
yeah,
you look at them, shine some light on them and look at what that reflection looks like. It might have a greenish tint. It might have a purplish tint. That's what happens with anti-reflective coatings. They just add this a bit of a tint to it. So those lenses inside, those pieces of glass inside the lens are actually anti-reflective coated. So there's coating on them to reduce that amount of bounce. And this will, in some cases, just add a bit of color to it. Yeah.
All right. Is lens flare good? Can a lens flare be good?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as I said, J.J. Abrams uses it for great success. Yeah. actually, what I sent you an email with a link to some pictures where lens flares are actually quite effective.
Do you
now?
Will you use it? Will you go for it?
Absolutely. Actually, sometimes I pick a lens that is very prone to doing lens flare just because I want a picture with light in the background that adds lens flare. And if you look at some of those pictures, in pretty much all of them, the flare does add atmosphere. It helps the picture. It adds a bit of mystery. It adds a bit of realism to it. And it's a normal thing. As a photographer, you know about these things. You know about the flare, and you either use it actively to enhance a picture, for example, to add sun streaks and these kind of things, or if you don't want the flare, you point the camera somewhere else and try to avoid very bright light sources right outside the frame.
Oh, look, now I'm looking with my iPhone 5 at our studio lights because we shoot video, so we have fairly bright studio lights. And when I point it at the light, it flares, but it flares in true color. It's only when the light is just at the edge.
Yes.
That it just starts to turn purple. It may also be, and this is what Apple's saying, reflecting a little bit against something inside.
That is
camera.
Also a possibility that something inside the camera might, where the light might just skim over something, right outside the lens.
They have a sapphire lens cover. Do you think that could be adding the lens flare, you think?
I don't know. I would expect that to be coated, anti-reflective coated on the inside to avoid some of the bouncing back of light.
But
I haven't opened one yet.
But you know, I don't know why people complain about such a thing because, I mean, all you have to do is turn it a little bit and it goes away.
Because they want to complain about something.
Yeah. Oh, and another thing. It's got purple lens flare. I'm mad as heck and I'm not going to take it anymore.
If you look at the, actually, filmmakers try to even shape lens flare. If you look at J.J. Abrams, he uses what's called anamorphic lenses that create lens flare that's not round, but more like streak shaped.
It goes dot, 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 down almost.
And it goes sideways. It kind of adds this interesting shape. So there's actually a real science behind generating beautiful lens flare.
J.J. Abrams, the king of lens flare.
If you want more lens flare on your iPhone pictures, you can actually add artificial lens flare. There's an app out there. I think it's even called Lens Flare, where you can put lens flare in your pictures. It's not as beautiful as real lens flare, but it's a fairly good simulation.
That's a hoot. A lens flare app.
Yep.
Wow.
Try it out. You'll have
Chris
fun.
Marquardt, he teaches photography. He's got workshops. You can find out more about that. And, of course, a great podcast called Tips from the Top Floor. All you have to do is go to his website. We have a link at our show notes, techguylabs.com. Or you can go directly to chrismarquardt.com. But a warning, he spells it with a lot of consonants. C-H-R-I-S-M-A-R. Okay, Mar, that's good. Q-U. Yeah, all right. A-R, here we go, here's the weird one, D-T, Marquardt.
That's a tongue twister. Well, you don't speak the D or the T, whichever you choose.
Yeah, Chris, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks for having me.
We should mention, before we go, we have an assignment in process. One of the things Chris does to encourage you to get out there and take pictures is we have a monthly assignment, not a competition. Even though we will pick three photographers and their images to, talk about on the show. But it's not a competition. It's just a way to get you out there. Our competition this month, did I say competition? Our assignment this month is to come up with a word or an image that illustrates the word face. We've got some great ones already. just to upload it to the Tech Guy group on Flickr, and we'll talk about it in a couple of weeks. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Street
Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. You want to talk high tech? I'd love to talk about it with you. Carrie in Mount Holly. Now, wait a minute. Now, did I have somebody on hold for the break? No, I don't think so, right? All right. Carrie in Mount Holly, New Jersey. You're next. Hi, Carrie. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Wait a minute. I didn't press the right button here. Let me try again. There we go. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Leo. I've been listening to you, watching you since EDTV, you and Patrick Norton.
Wow.
And you actually autographed my old Wall Street Mac laptop in Cherry Hill, New Jersey many years ago. It had your signature in silver on my Wall Street.
And what did you do with that old laptop?
It's under the bed, actually. It hasn't worked for several years. I can't throw it out. I can't throw out any Macs. I just can't do that.
We have a pretty good collection here at the Brickhouse Studios of old Mac gear. One of our engineers, Alex Gumpel, is a Windows user. He doesn't even use an iPhone. He uses a Windows phone. But for some reason, he collects old Macs. So he have Mac SEs, just every kind of Mac.
Well, they're beautiful pieces of work.
Morgan Webb.
Yeah, whatever happened to her?
Well, she's on a very obscure cable channel called G4.
Oh.
Her show, so we're talking old television networks. Tech TV, originally ZDTV, as you mentioned, started in 1998 by Ziff Davis Publishing. They published PC Magazine, a lot of other computer magazines.
Watched all the time.
I worked on it. I did two shows, The Screensavers and Call for Help, through 2004, for 6 years. Morgan started, I think she started as a researcher for The Screensavers, but she was so comely and so smart that we ended up putting her on the air. She eventually moved on to host a show called, I think it was X-Play, with Adam Sessler. And when the channel was sold, Paul Allen, Microsoft billionaire, Paul Allen decided he didn't have enough money to lose to continue to run the station. So he sold it to Comcast, which merged it with its gaming channel, G4. For a while, they called it G4 Tech TV. Then they admitted the truth. They didn't really care about Tech TV, so they called it G4. But the gaming show continued to this day. Adam Sessler's moved on, but I believe Morgan Webb's still hosting it on G4.
I may have to tune to that just to see her, because I'm not big into G4, but I'll watch it.
Well, you know what's funny? G4 is basically a failed channel. They turned, as often happens with tech channels, to reruns of old TV shows, mostly Cops and American Ninja, and because they're cheap, right? And right. They had a few shows still. Attack of the Show continued, and so did X-Play. Yeah. But, unfortunately, they have just recently announced that they're abandoning technology, and they want to become a GQ for television, a men's channel.
Oh, boy.
So I'm sure Morgan will find more work. She's very smart, very talented.
Yeah, and very pretty.
And very pretty, yeah.
Okay. Now, I have an iPad, the original iPad, which I love, still love to death. And unlike you, I don't like to update, because when I update, certain things that I love go away. And
well, I'll give you a good example. If you got the iOS 6 on your iPhone, all of a sudden Google Maps went away and you had a kind of junky iPhone replacement.
Well, there's a big one. I stayed with iOS 3 for so long, but eventually I had to move up, and I went to iOS 5.
Yeah.
And in the music app, where I used to be able to see videos in playlists.
They separated it out into a separate app.
And that separate app, no more list views, just tiles that you have to scroll and scroll and
I know. I hate that.
It's horrendous. Is there any third-party app? I'll pay $100 for anything to give me back that functionality.
Boy, that's an interesting question. I mean, there are other video viewing programs on iOS. In fact, I have quite a few. Is it videos that you have on your device that you want to play back?
I have movies. I have videos. Okay. I have things I want to show people, a quick 2-second clip, and I could just scroll through that playlist and show it instead of them previewing, seeing a picture of that.
Well, there's VLC. We were talking about it earlier. I think that, I don't know, can you still download that, or did Apple kill that too? They might have.
Well, I tried VLC, but it doesn't have the
no playlists.
No, it has tiles.
And videos doesn't either. Golly, Sergeant Carter. I don't know what to say. I don't know if there is anything that'll Still, that's a chat room. Is there an iOS app that will let you do a playlist of videos instead of just tiles of your videos?
Yeah, just text.
Nobody has said anything yet in the chat room, but we shall see.
I wish I could go back to iOS 3 just for that. iPad was so great at presenting quick videos to people.
People don't often talk about this, but Apple does, in fact, when they upgrade, often downgrade certain things. And the biggest downgrade everybody's aware of now is Maps, but it's not the first time they've done that. They've deprecated programs or eliminated capabilities, and you picked a good one. It bugged the heck out of me when suddenly my videos are no longer in the music library. They're in their own. I couldn't for a long. It took me about 3 months to figure out where they'd moved them.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't have a good answer for you, Carrie. But you know, there's a lot of people listening. Maybe somebody has a good idea.
All right, bleeding edge, as you say, makes you bleed.
That's right.
Okay, thank you.
All right, nice to talk to you. I'll say hi to Morgan for you. Her husband, Rob Reed, is an interesting fella. He started Rhapsody, which is a music service predating, you know, Spotify and all the current music services, and wrote an interesting book about copyright and aliens. See, apparently the aliens are superior to us in every way but one. They can't make good music. Their music is terrible, and they love our music. But I guess they're pirates. So apparently they have a fairly large bill. Billions of dollars they owe the music industry. His book is called Year Zero. It's a hoot. It's very funny. Rob Reed is the author, Morgan Webb's husband. He says, "I am the luckiest man in the world being married to Morgan Webb." Larry, Orange, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Leo.
What's up? So you got a new TV.
Yeah, it's a...
It's got digital audio out, right?
Yeah, well, the only audio out is optical. It doesn't have what I'm used to seeing is the RCA jacks.
There are no... Now, see, we talked about this last week with our audio-visual guy, our expert on home theater, Scott Wilkinson. And he said most TVs... we'll have an analog output. You're saying there's no analog audio out at all.
Well, this is a brand spanking new Panasonic, and it has one audio out that I can see.
Which Panasonic did you get? Because I just bought one myself. Is it the
5-inch plasma?
Yeah, the GT or the VT? Larry, let me look and see. There probably is a digital to audio analog audio converter. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hold on. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's time to talk computers and the internet, cell phones and camcorders, home theater, MP3 players, all that jazz. Phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO. If you got a question, call me. I'll help you out. Got a comment? Love to hear it. Suggestion? Got that too. 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere. So Larry called. He's got a brand new TV, nice Panasonic. You got the Panasonic plasma, Larry?
Yeah.
Nice TV. I just bought one myself. And I was looking on the website for the specs, and you're absolutely, of course you're right, you have it, but you're absolutely right. I was shocked. There is one audio output. Lots of analog inputs, but one audio output. And I guess the reasoning is that most people don't use the TV for their tuner. They're using some other device. Do you have it hooked up to a cable box or?
Well, right now while I'm assembling all this stuff, I've just got it on antenna because I live here in Death Ray Valley in Orange County. I get pretty good strong over-the-air signal. But anyway, we agree that we only have an optical output, and I could clearly see that that must be encoded digitally because
it's a digital output. It's digital. So you need a digital to analog audio converter to run it in straight into your speakers. You have powered speakers, right?
Well, I have all kinds of amplifiers around here that I can just plug in audio in. But I had to get it from digital to audio. So I got on the web, and I found no end of the identical box.
Yeah.
It's about a 2-inch by 2-inch by 1-inch adapter that basically has the optical input and a coaxial input, which looks like an equivalent, just a different kind of cable.
Right.
It has a little, you know, power box on it, like, I think, 5 volts. So I know there's some kind of active logic in it. I hooked it up to the input to a amplifier, and it just didn't have, there was just nothing but noise. So I thought, I checked in the audio settings. Excuse me. I checked in the audio settings on the TV, and I turned off the 5.1 and made it to whatever they call it.
Yeah, it needs to be just left-right. It needs to be stereo because it won't. The problem is they're assuming that you're going to an audio-visual receiver.
Right, and that's what the store. The store wants to sell you that at a minimum $250 receiver.
I'm looking at this box that you're using. It's $22 at mono price. It's just an inexpensive DAC, digital to analog audio converter.
Right, and but that same box is labeled 40 different brands, and you can get it on Amazon like 16, I think, if that, including shipping.
Good.
However, I'm not sure how to test it because I don't know if the box I received is actually functioning. Now, to make a long story short, I hooked it up with the optical cable. I looked at my amplifiers and I said, you know, maybe this thing doesn't put out enough horsepower. Maybe I need a preamp. So I stuck a little preamp to their left-right RCA.
That makes sense, yeah.
Right. And it does drive the amplifiers and it does drive the speakers, but only when the input video source to the TV is from, if you laugh, I'm going to come and get you, an old VCR.
Ah, the VCR works fine.
Yeah, so the VCR is coming out, and it goes to the audio and left-right channels using the adapter cable that Panasonic gave me. And they only have one input for that, by the way. You can't have two VCRs, or you can't have an old...
Well, and what you're finding is why people buy AV receivers.
Well, you don't have much choice, but...
No, and it simplifies everything. If you have multiple inputs... it's really the easiest way to do it. I presume you also have a DVD player. You might have a Blu-ray player. I mean,
yes, both.
Yeah, the obvious answer is to spend more money.
I know that's what the world wants me to do on pretty much everything from gasoline to food.
Welcome to the world, and I understand you're a do-it-yourselfer, and I understand your desire. And in theory, I think the issue is you hit the nail on the head. You're getting some sort of encoded audio. You're not getting standard left-right stereo audio. You're getting something Dolby True sound or something.
On the little optical converter, this little box that you're looking at on there, it does have left and right RCA jacks.
Right.
But first off, whatever's coming out of there doesn't have enough horsepower to drive a power amplifier or even a small power amplifier. So I put the preamp in there, but it only works when the audio source going into the TV is from the VCR. It does not work from off-air. It also works if I have the old DVD player. It's not old. It's just
Those are probably giving you just kind of unencoded standard left-right audio, and I think that's the issue. So it's not the level because you're able to put an amp on it, and you're able to get it to a level where it works on the VCR and the DVD. It's just on this newer stuff, right?
Right. Well, whatever comes off the air, I guess HD 1.5 or HD 5.1.
It's probably 5.1, yeah.
Now, I looked on the web. Everybody that's bought one of these boxes thinks they're the greatest thing since sliced bread. But I certainly don't see how... I mean, if you've heard that they do work, then this might just be a defective unit.
It might be. That, by the way, when you get cheap Chinese, you know, knockoffs, it might be. I'm looking at one that the chat room suggested that comes from Newer Tech, and I like this company. It's $35, though. It's not $16. It's not the same exact box. It's toss link to RCA analog, but I think you're going to always have the same issue. It sounds like your device is working, but there's something not, you're getting Dolby, not, you know, standard PCM, unencrypted, uncompressed audio. So I just think you need to look back at the source, at the TV. Maybe the TV can't even do this. I don't know. But I think that that's the issue, is that the source is still encoded, and you need standard left-right PCM uncompressed audio. And this is exactly why people use AV receivers, because it just solves the problem. It does. The receiver looks at it and says, oh, you're sending me 5.1 surround encoded in Dolby. I'll fix that. I have now two AV receivers because I don't want to go through this. The Casey in New Hampshire says, turn the output of the optical to stereo. Should be in the menu. I think he did that, though. But try again. Make sure that the TV is sending unencoded audio. That's pretty much everybody in the chat room saying. And I know, Larry, that you said you did that, but try again, maybe. Linda, Laguna Hills, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Linda.
Hi, thank you. Recently, my computer doesn't always turn on properly. Well, it's a Dell, and it comes up where it wants the password, but it won't let me enter it sometimes. Hmm. And then sometimes it will let me enter it. It'll get past that, and that word welcome will come up, and the little blue circle just goes
it just
forever.
Sits there. Yeah, I think your hard drive has had a little Surus. It's got maybe a little minor stroke. These things happen.
Oh,
hard drives go.
Yeah. Okay, do I just get a new computer? And
No, gosh, no. Well, you don't. Is it a recent model? I mean, do you want to keep it? Do you like it?
2 years?
Yeah, no, you should. So here's the deal on hard drives.
I'll lose everything.
No, I don't blame
you.
And the chances are everything's still on there.
Seems to be.
So I'll talk to you. We got to take a break. I'll talk to you a little bit about what to do when a hard drive doesn't work in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Now that is obscure. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Where did you find that? Kyle Benham, my musical director. That is the most obscure thing. A song music of the Beatles, Let It Be, with words about obscure programming languages. Lisp is dead and boring, write in C. That, where'd you find that, Kyle? That's wild. That is obscure. Oh, that was in honor of Dennis Ritchie. All right, there you go. The inventor of the C programming language, who passed away earlier this year. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the phone number. We were talking to Laguna Hills Linda. That's your new name, Linda. Linda in Laguna Hills.
Yes.
And she says her computer is acting up. Sometimes it'll boot up, sometimes it won't. Sometimes it just gets stuck. Does it boot up at all anymore?
Well, yes. Because once I push on the button and turn it off, then it will come back on. You know, that's how it says it wasn't turned off properly.
Right, because it wasn't, because it didn't boot properly.
Exactly.
So you had to
exactly.
turn it off. That's
but
fine.
But then it works okay. I left it on recently, though, because I'm afraid to turn it off. So I don't know.
Yeah, so my question is it the hard... So, and this I don't know, and I know you don't know, but it could be the hard drive. It could also be other components. Could be your power supply is starting to fail. But since it's a brand new computer, or relatively new, it's only 2 years old, I think it's most likely a flaky hard drive. And this is not at all unusual. IBM did a study of hard drives, a longitudinal study of hard drives. I'm sorry, Google did a longitudinal study of hard drives over a long period of time. As you might expect, Google uses more hard drives than almost anybody because all of that stuff that you use Google for is on hard drives.
Yeah.
And what they found was they kept careful statistics on their hard drives, that hard drives tend to fail either right away, like in the first 3 months, because they're just a defect. Or they work pretty reliably, but it's after 2 years, they start failing at the rate of 4 or 5% a year every year thereafter.
Wow, okay.
So you just got unlucky. you got a hard drive, I think, that's starting to act a little flaky. Now, it may be, and it may not be the hard drive's gone. It may just be that the data that was written on the hard drive, you know, got hard to read, and that's could be what's happening. Windows is looking at it, going, I can't read this, and gives up. You reboot it, it tries again, it goes, oh, yeah, I understand, and continues on.
Nice. All right.
It could be that. It could be. I mean, there are other issues. There were problems right about that time with motherboards that had bad capacitors that were, you know, having this kind of a problem. It could be a what we call a cold solder, where the computer doesn't run properly because when the solder is cold, but as it warms up, the connection, the electrical connection is made. But the fact that you're able to get all the way to the Windows prompt, and that's where, is that always where it fails at the Windows prompt?
No, not all the way. What do you mean all the way?
Well, it gets to the point where it's already starting to boot Windows, right? Where does it get stuck?
In the beginning, the very beginning.
What's the very beginning? What is it? Okay. What do you see on the screen?
The blue screen, and it says Dell, and then underneath it, there's a little line for your password.
Your password?
Or maybe it's a, I don't know what it's called. Is it called a password? I don't know.
Would you normally enter something at that point? So you password protected your PC?
I don't know why. Don't ask me why.
Okay, so I think that sounds like it's a BIOS password or maybe a hard drive password. And it's getting stuck there.
Yes. Right.
Okay, so we're not getting to Windows.
Not yet.
Now, sometimes you'll enter that password and it will continue on.
Right, and then it says welcome, but it never gets past that.
Never gets past welcome. So that's Windows running when you see, well, I think it is.
It depends on.
Do you see? Yeah. Do you see the line that says starting Windows?
No.
Yeah. This will be. It's working fine now. So sometimes it stops, and sometimes it can go all the way.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not very computer savvy.
No. Don't beat yourself up here. You're giving me good information. What I'm trying to figure out is see, from the point that it stops is kind of where we can tell what's going on. If it gets all the way to Windows and stops, like it starts to launch Windows or it's asking you for your Windows password and then it can't go on, that's more likely a hard drive error because the computer is able to get far enough along with the hardware that it can at least start running Windows, but then maybe something in Windows is missing. But it sounds like you're not getting that far. Sounds like you're dying with it. Does it still have the Dell logo on the screen?
Well, that's where it freezes.
It freezes on the Dell logo.
Right. And won't let me enter that password that I...
Is not a hard drive error. I was wrong. I misunderstood what you were telling me.
Sometimes it does go past that, and it does get to the window. So it depends on what it feels like. It's
yeah. No, you've got a hardware problem.
Hardware.
I would guess.
Okay.
But really, what you got to do is get this to Dell and have them fix it.
Yuck. All right.
I know Yick is right. I understand. You're now facing hours of limbo, waiting for phone support and so forth. But it could be a number of different things that are probably not easily fixed. If it were the hard drive, I could run you through some stuff to try to fix it. But I think unfortunately, you've got to either get Dell or some local guru to take a look at it and probably do a hardware diagnostic. It sounds like the BIOS may have messed up or you've got a bad power supply or a motherboard error, but it sounds like a hardware error.
Well, I will figure it out then. Thank you.
I am sorry. I wish I could be more supportive on this one, but there's nothing I can do. If it were the hard drive, as I said, maybe, but hardware, you got to take it. Either take it to Dell or take it to someone local who can mess with it a little bit. Could be RAM. Could be so many different things that have gone wrong here. And you're right. It shouldn't happen after 2 years. Hard drive, yeah. That's not unusual, but this is more serious, it sounds like. Gary in Camarillo, California. Hi, Gary. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I've got a couple of quick questions.
All right.
I need your personal opinion. I was going to get a new cell phone, and I was going to choose between the iPhone and the new Motorola Razr M. Which one would you choose if you had to take one around the world with you?
around the world. Well, Verizon's not great for around the world.
Yeah.
Because Verizon's CDMA. However, the iPhone 5 on Verizon happens to be the best world phone ever made. Because Verizon, whether intentionally or not, did not lock the SIM card in here. So you can, in fact, take this phone and use it as a GSM phone or a CDMA phone. And you could even, when you get to France or England or Germany or wherever you're going, buy a local SIM card, give you a local number and often much less expensive local data, pop it in this phone and use it. So the Razer M I like a lot. Great battery life and really beautiful edge-to-edge screen. It's Android, of course, but it is not a good world phone. The iPhone 5 on Verizon happens to be excellent. Dr. Webb is here. Rick Alber is a longtime friend and for many years was on the radio show talking about websites. We don't talk about websites much anymore. It's like, did you do CD-ROMs before we did? I think you did. Didn't we do CD-ROMs for a while?
You gave me the name Dr. Rom a long time ago.
And you got to pick a better medium, Rick. Now he's going to be Dr. App. How about that? Can you be Dr. App?
Yeah, Dr. App sounds good.
So he was Dr. Rom, then CD-ROMs went away. Dr. Web, and you know, who talks about websites anymore? I mean, it's not even a thing.
We've evolved beyond that. We are definitely in the app world, and that's what I want to talk about today, a new terrific Google app that's available for Android phones called Field Trip.
You know, this thing is so interesting to me, and they had an event, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to get Rick on the line, because you went to the event for the introduction of Field Trip. It was, you know, it's not exactly a Google. It was written by a Google engineer, but it doesn't kind of bill itself as a Google app, or does it?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, it does? Okay.
They're going to release it soon, they say, for iOS. So it's not strictly a Google Android app. But right now it runs on Android. I think any version of Android newer than including Gingerbread and newer. And
so what does it do?
Well, what it is it delivers location-based information in kind of multimedia format to you, to your device, your phone or your tablet, as you move around. And it can deliver, like, history of local landmarks, restaurant listings and reviews, local events and notices of things that are going to happen based on where you are at the time. And importantly, it delivers it in an unprompted way. It simply gives you an alert that can be an audio alert or a visual alert on your device. And then if you want to accept the alert, it will then deliver that information about whatever it's notified you about.
It is a strange experience. I turn it on and I turn on the voice, and what happens is, as you're moving around, it'll start talking in a robotic voice. Over there is where the movie American Graffiti was shot in 1973. It is really strange. They have movie locations, but I think that this is more than just a novelty. I think this is where Google wants to go, right?
Yeah, and to me, the reason I got excited about it was it's a new kind of platform for delivering information, and it's not limited to just, or right now it's limited to just, I think they have 41 content partners that have compiled information and deliver it to your device, but they want to eventually have it be open so that third-party folks can publish their own content that's location-specific and give users the ability to subscribe or to specify that they want information from whatever content providers they're interested in to come on their phone. The fellow that I think has headed up the project team for Field Trip at Google is John Hankey. And he was the guy that originally developed Keyhole, which Google purchased about a decade ago, I guess now, and turned into Google Earth. And if you remember, Google Earth allows you to do mashups and create what are called KML files that are more or less overlays of your own content that plug into the Google Earth interface and allow people to, you know, see your content, your map locations within that publishing platform. So if Field Trip kind of can work the same way, and that's Hanke's intent, as he told me when I interviewed him this week, it can become a publishing platform for people that have information specific to location and want to deliver it. Now, the way it works right now is it's essentially a database, right, that's maintained on Google servers that associates graphic, JPEG, image, or a text file, or both, with a specific location. They can also support audio files, so you're not limited to that robotic text-to-speech.
It could actually, you know, where I thought this would be kind of fun is if I go to Paris, if there's enough information, it would be almost like when you go to a museum and you have that thing hanging around your neck and you listen to the narration as you walk through. I'd love to have a live narration as I walk through Paris of historic sites.
Sure, and it's like a digital docent, right?
Yeah.
Someone who's always with you, but you're not limited to a pre-recorded pathway through, you know, a museum or the streets of Paris. You can, you know, again, in theory, if the content's there, you can set this up so that you walk through the streets of Paris and it would notify you when you came to a historic place or wanted more information. You could talk to it if it provides a voice interface. It doesn't do that yet, but you could presumably talk to it and say, I want lunch, you know, or I want, you know, a place that's inexpensive and serves a certain type of food. And this would then, you know, look in its database, calculate how close it was, give you some choices, much like kind of Google Earth or Google Maps does now, and then lead you to the whatever you're interested in.
This is Google's holy grail. In fact, I remember Eric Schmidt talking, and it was kind of a weird thing he said, but we'll know if you need pants, and then as you're walking through town, when you go by a place with a special on pants, it'll tell you, hey, over to the left, you can get your pants.
Right.
This was
right.
His vision, and this is, I mean, that's kind of a trivial use, but this is an interesting idea. Now, of course, Google has Google Deals built into it, so it does, in fact, say, hey, you can get a dollar off a cup of coffee over there. So that's where they're going to make money on this.
That's right. And if you, you know, explain that example of the Google pants and your phone interrupting you to say, hey, there's a pants store over here, and there's a great deal on pants right now. I'm sure that about half your listeners are out there saying, I'm never going to turn this thing on.
This
sounds awful. But as I, you know, confirmed with John Hanke, they put a lot of thought into the interface of Field Trip.
It's beautiful. It's elegant. And as I said, I can't wait to go somewhere where there's actually something to see. Now, here in Petaluma, we have a lot of movie locations. So there is a movie location database, and I'm seeing, you know, it's kind of cool. Oh, over there, Peggy Sue Got Married was filmed. Or, oh, over there, American Graffiti was filmed. So that's kind of neat. And I think if you went somewhere historic, it might be really useful. I imagine that Apple wants to do the same thing.
Most likely, yeah. With Field Trip right now, they've got different broad categories. So you can subscribe or, you know, turn on information about categories like restaurants.
It's quite a few, yeah. And you do uncheck it. If you don't want Google offers, you can turn that off. So you do have granular control over what you're seeing.
Very granular. That was the point I was kind of getting to, that they know that you don't want to be bothered, you know, a lot of the time. So it's very easy in Field Trip to specify that you want a lot of information pushed to you, or you want just a little bit, or you want none. And you can specify whether the thing will translate the information audially so that, you know, it can interrupt you, for instance, if you want it to, or otherwise it'll be silent and maybe just show you an alert on your screen. Or you can even specify that you only want it to talk to you when you're driving.
I thought that was really interesting, yeah.
So it seems like they're kind of sensitive to this idea that people in some cases want information and in other cases they just don't want to have their phone nagging at them. And that's a very important kind of thought process.
Rick Albert is Dr. App. We're going to rename you. Thank you, Rick. Great to talk to you. The app is available on the Play Store in the U.S. It's called Field Trip.
watching it fly past, and away we go.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-88 Ask Leo. That's the number. If you got a question, a comment, a suggestion, we got a few more minutes before this show wraps itself up for the weekend. I think this Google app is more than just an app. I think it really is an indicator as to where Google wants to go and why Android is so important to Google going forward. And Apple, I'm sure, will do the same thing. Because and this is the challenge, for instance, for companies like Facebook. One of the reasons Facebook stock has plummeted is because Facebook makes money on the ads when you use the website. But more and more people are using Facebook, now more than half of the people who use Facebook, on mobile, where there are no ads. And we already know that banner ads on mobile, the kinds of ads that you see on websites, really don't work. So people are rightly so, I think, saying, how are you going to make money, Facebook, if more and more people are using it on mobile, and your current monetization plan, your current way of making money, doesn't include mobile? Clearly, Google is thinking hard about how do you make money on smartphones. And this is this is the kind of thing where it is the best of both worlds. Yeah, Google has to make money. These companies can't offer you these services for free. They have to monetize it. But it should be a fair trade. I should be getting something for giving them information about where I am and letting them show me an ad about, you know, a good deal on pants or a buck off coffee. I should be getting something else. And this field trip is a good example of really some great value. It turns everything as you walk around or drive around into a field trip. You get information about your surroundings. That's really cool. That's really interesting. Then, okay, occasionally I'll see an ad for coffee, and maybe even I'll take advantage of it. That's not so bad. Leslie is in Los Angeles. She's our next caller, or he. Hi, Leslie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I love your show.
Thank you.
I have a problem. I keep getting this window from Microsoft telling me that I need to close, that there's something wrong with my Internet Explorer. Whenever I go to a site, it pops up and it says, click at the bottom of it to send an error report or not to send.
Yeah, don't send an error report. I mean, you can if you want. So what's happening is Internet Explorer is crashing. And that may be why sometimes people jocularly call it Internet Exploder. It crashes, but all browsers do crash because the web is an unpredictable place, and sometimes a browser has to work harder than it can. My suggestion, are you using, what version of Internet Exploder, I mean Explorer, are you using?
XP.
Okay.
And I'm technically challenged,
please, people apologize. You should never apologize. I will not assume that you are a computer programmer, but at the same time, you shouldn't be apologetic. This stuff shouldn't be so hard to use.
It just pops up, and even on my email, sometimes when I'm going just to looking at my email, all of a sudden it pops up and says, I'm sorry, we have to close, and then I click it to close, and it'll come back and says, the tab was recovered, and it comes back.
First,
I'm actually on the computer now trying to, read the window to you. But, of course, now that I'm talking to you,
it won't do it. First of all, I want to make sure, Leslie, that you're using the most recent version of Internet Explorer. You should be on IE9. Now, I know this is hard for you to know. Do you run Windows updates regularly?
Do I get what?
Do you run the Windows updates regularly?
No.
Okay. So that's a big problem. I'm going to scold you now.
Oh, you mean like at the end when you're closing?
No, well, yeah, you know, that's what, yeah. So you see that every once in a while. Oh, Windows has updates.
Every time it comes up, yeah.
Okay. So that means your Windows updates are automatic updates are turned on. Thank goodness.
Right.
Thank goodness. Because if you don't have that turned on, you got lots of problems. Those updates patch vulnerabilities in the system. And Microsoft does this monthly. And when those patches go out, it's a signal to hackers, hey, we got a problem in this area, and hackers will start attacking. So you want those updates the minute they come out. If you're getting those updates, here's what I would suggest you do. Run Windows Update and see, make sure that you've got the latest Internet Explorer. It will not normally force you to update, but it will say, hey, you know, you really ought to be using IE8 by now.
So IE?
8.
8.
Yeah. Let's go with that one.
I think that's what I should have that.
Yeah, okay. And then the other option is just not to use IE8, but to use a different browser. You know, there are many choices, and a one that I particularly like is from Google. It's called Chrome.
Okay.
And I would try installing that. You can get that. Go just run Internet Explorer, and if it doesn't crash on you, go to google.com/Chrome. That's free.
Okay.
Now, it may be that in browsing around, you've accidentally installed a browser helper object or a plugin or a toolbar that's causing these problems. It shouldn't crash all the time. That's not right.
That could be it.
Yeah. So I would also, first of all, using Chrome will eliminate that because you won't be using IE anymore. But I would also go and look at IE and uninstall any extensions that you don't know what they are. Get rid of.
Okay.
You know? They're telling me in the chat room, and they're quite right, you cannot use IE9 because of XP. You have to use IE8. But that IE8 is better than the previous version. So, you should make sure you have IE8. And then do me a favor, and if you do the updates, that's great. Every once in a while after you do an update, it's the second Tuesday of every month, I want you to run Microsoft's malicious software removal tool.
About that MRT thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did that because that was what I talked to Microsoft one time over the phone to try to alleviate this problem, and they told me to run that.
Good.
And literally, I did it, and it worked for about 10 minutes.
Yes.
And then when I tried to call them back, like another day about it, I was told that I could only do any kind of tech support online with them, talking to someone.
Yeah, once a month or something. You have to pay for it, yeah. But no, MRT will take a long time because it's scanning the whole hard drive. 10 minutes is nothing. It may take longer, but what you want to do is let it run until it completes.
But I did. I let the whole thing, it did it, and
And it didn't say there were any bugs on there.
Yeah, it said I was good.
Yay! Yay. So I would just look, make sure you don't, if you have toolbars on there, take them off. Those toolbars may be crashing, i.e. should not crash by itself.
Okay.
But you could also use Google Chrome and eliminate that, I would suspect.
Okay, but you think I should run the Windows? I should run the updates again, though, like on my own?
It wouldn't hurt. And if you run updates, if you have an older version of IE, it will say, oh, by the way, we could update Internet Explorer for you.
Okay.
They push it on you. You can see which version of Internet Explorer you have if you just check. I think it's about the About menu item, I believe.
Okay.
You want to be using IE8. But I think you can also use Chrome, and, you know, IE does not go away, but Chrome is a little bit better. Toolbars I don't like. When people say, when programs say, hey, would you like to install the, XYZ, just say no. Let's not burden our browsers even more. Let's see, I think I have time for one more if I hurry. Kathy in Laurel, Missouri. Oh, I don't have time. There's the magic sound. Darn it, Kathy! So close! We'll make you the first call next week. Thanks for joining me. Have a great Geek Week. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.